It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to Zero Pucks Given, the ice hockey podcast for Chelmsford Chieftains fans. This is episode 16. Thank you for joining me. Feature length episode this week, so you've guessed it, jam-packed. We've got a full breakdown of the double game weekend as the Chieftains descended on hell to face the Devils and the Oxford City Stars visit the Riverside. Since the release of the last episode, the Chieftains have parted company with head coach Mark Saunders. Results and performances had been poor of late, and the 6-3 defeat to Invicta Dynamos was unfortunately the final straw. I'd like to personally thank Mark for all his work at the Chieftains, putting together a cracking roster and doing his very best to get them playing as a team, and for all his time that he gave to the podcast. I honestly wish him all the best for the future. There's no sort of news yet as to who will be the new permanent head coach. Saturday saw Dean Burrell behind the bench, while Sunday saw Anthony Leone, who declined to comment on anything. there's also a welcome this week to former Chelmsford Ice Hockey Academy player Megas Kanis, who's rejoined the Chelmsford fold. We saw a little bit of him in the home games at Oxford on Sunday, but we'd expect to see more of him in the under-18s and the Warriors. Also, on a slightly more sour note, there was some rumours circulating on social media of damage in the away dressing room at Solent at the weekend. Grant Bartlett has advised that this is untrue, and our management have contacted Solent, who are looking into who made the false accusations. So that's the facts that we do have. So any sort of talking about it on social media is pretty pointless, really, because the facts have come from us that it was untrue. So we can leave them there. Right then, also, this episode is absolutely rammed with guests. We've got the Chelmsford Cobras and Pythons head coach Shane Mead, who will join me to discuss women's hockey and the home doubleheader that the women's side have this weekend coming. And I've teased this one a lot over the last week or so. The Sheriff, Sean McMorrow, makes his Zero Pucks Given debut, and that's a corker. And finally, Chieftains GB student player George Gell has returned from Lake Placid in New York and is jumping straight into the podcast to tell us all about that experience and his hockey career. But we will start with the final league game against Solent Devils this season, which is down at Planet Ice in Gosport. Saturday night then, down to the freezing cold Planet Ice in Gosport, and just the 12 players in the bench for the Chieftains. Dean Burrell in the bench for them as well, and one netminder, 11 skaters, and what a fantastic performance that they really did put on. It was a tight game to start with, but we did stop Solent having that little bit of home advantage where they normally push you very early and very quickly. But after, I think, 3 minutes it was, Alex Murray did put the home side into the lead, assisted by Coleman and Pitts. But very shortly after, Grant Bartlett equalised with a typical Grant Bartlett smasher, assisted by Ethan Reid. And just towards the end of the second, Ross Clark put us 2-1 up, smashing home from the slot close range, assisted by Hitchings and Fillery. And the first ended at 2-1 to the Chieftains. Into the second then, and quite early on, Dan Lackey got in and made it 2-2. And Solent really then started to put the pressure on, going 3-2 up halfway through the period with Dan Lackey on the score sheet again. As the game went on, it got quite scrappy. There was a lot of dodgy decisions, some calls not being called. Grant Bartlett was boarded into the boards that gave him a sort of a facial injury that he had to come off with. He did go back on, but not even a boarding call for it. So some quite strange decisions. And then on 38 minutes, Sasha Maltsev finished off a fantastic move that ended up with a little bit of a goalmail scramble, but he managed to tip the puck over the line and equalise on 38:55. As we went into the third, there was something extremely strange that happened as Solent attacked down their left. Forsyth had a shot across Luca Tesadri, which dinged the iron that everybody in the arena must have heard the ding. But the light went off, the buzzer went off, and the goal was given. And from where I was sitting on the away bench, there's not really any way that the puck could have come out at the angle it did if it hit the net. I'm not entirely sure that one crossed the line. It'll be interesting to see the Solent Devils highlights, as I think they've got a behind the goal camera doing that there. But 4-3 to the Devils it was. Didn't last long though, as a minute later, Callum Burnett scored a fantastic goal, smashing in the near post from the right-hand circles, assisted by Pentecost and Grant Bartlett. With 9 minutes to go, the Chiefs retook the lead 5-4 as Grant Bartlett got on the score sheet yet again, assisted by Pence and Faye. And the Chieftains were holding quite tight for 9 minutes, but quite late, Solent come again. There was, again, another slightly dodgy call, as there seemed to be a bit of interference on Luca Tesadri. His stick was knocked out of his hand. He was pinned against the frame of the goal. Ethan Reid gave him his stick to try and sort of give him a helping hand in keeping the puck out. But unfortunately, Pitts managed to put it in for 5-5. And into overtime we went. Minute and 27 into overtime, as both teams were playing the patient approach and keeping the puck in the defensive zone, skating around, looking for them two-on-ones, until Liam Coleman broke through the lines, took a nice path down the right-hand side, cut inside, and smashed it top bins past Luca Tesadri. So really, really fantastic performance from the lads. You know, you can't complain about going down to Solent, the form they're in with 12 players and taking a point. And a sign that the performance was a hell of a lot better, and there was end product as well. So, again, not the result that the lads would have wanted, but certainly gaining some credit from that. And looking forward to getting home to face Oxford City Stars on Sunday with a much larger bench. Sunday night's home game against Oxford City Stars saw some proper hockey tomfoolery during the warm-up, with multiple players determined to be the last one on the ice. Pickering, Rayner and Tesadri were getting the psychological edge on Xander Wardlaw as he and Pickering launched pucks at each other from either end of the rink. I might add, neither of them managed to score one. Many buzzers and many horns and even the MC intervening to get the lads off the ice. And it finally finished with a rock, paper, scissors between Rayner and Wardlaw that saw the ice clear for the Zamboni. The psychological lead told just 22 seconds in as Grant Bartlett finished from a close, tight angle, assisted by Cam Bartlett. 5 minutes later, and Faye and Pentecost combined again to feed Grant Bartlett, who smashed home to make it 2-0. On 8:01, Rayner took a very questionable high sticks penalty, which was accidental, if anything, and possibly the Oxford player's fault. But just 6 seconds into the power play, Dushnik pulled one back for the visitors. Seconds later, on 8:33, Cam Bartlett restored the lead to 3, unassisted. On 10:27, it was 4 after good work from Fillery and masterful work from the gorgeous specimen, Matty Turner, gave Ollie Baldock the chance to make it 4-1, which he gladly took. Oxford called a timeout, pulled their netminder, fearing the game was getting away from them. We had a little bit of 4-on-4 after Burnett and Hedges went medieval, slashing each other on 15:13. But the first finish 4-1. Chiefs started the second on the kill after Rayner received two for cross-checking in the last minute of the first, but the Chiefs managed to kill that penalty. On 31:02, Pickering took two for tripping, and on the power play, Dax Hedges made it 4-2. In the aftermath of the goal, there was madness that ensued, and the refs spent quite a few minutes sorting the penalties out, as Cam Bartlett took two for interference and five for fighting. Dan Fay took five for fighting, although it was more pushy-shovey than fisty-cuffy. Hedges and Moody got five each for Oxford. Still on the power play, Oxford made it 4-3 when Oliver scored, and the game suddenly felt a lot less comfortable than it did. Didn't last long, though, as on 38:40, Callum Burnett hit an almost identical goal to his last two, smashing high in the near post from the right circle, and the second finished 5-3. Into the third, and some power play chances for Oxford as Baldock, Clark and Reid made separate trips to the box, but special teams held firm. On 54:08, Grant Bartlett got his hat-trick to make the score 6-3. And 2 minutes later, Fillery assisted Ollie Baldock for a lovely finish on 56:07, making it two for Baldock this week. On 59:23, the scoring was finished as Ethan Reid got a very well-deserved goal to make the final score 8-3. A great performance and a great win. A three-point weekend, and both performances were vast improvements. Going to Solent with 12 players and taking a point is not to be sniffed at. And when you consider some of the officiating and the two goals that possibly shouldn't have stood, it could have been a lot better. But Sunday night was a really, really good performance. Shame about conceding three on the power play. I'm sure that Anthony Leone, who was in the bench on Sunday, won't be overly pleased about that. But as I said, he declined to comment on just about anything. So let's get the rest of the results from the NIHL this weekend. Other results in the NIHL 1 then. On Saturday, the Raiders Junior versus Invicta Dynamos game went to overtime after a 6-6 draw, and Raiders took the point with a goal from TJ Anderson. Oxford's weekend on the road wasn't a classics for them. Before their defeat to Chelmsford on Sunday, they were defeated 6-0 by Slough Jets at the Hangar, Massey getting himself a shutout there. On Sunday, the Invicta Dynamos got themselves a road win 7-2 at MK Thunder, and the Raiders' trip to Streatham saw the league leaders take a 6-1 win at the High Road. Fixtures for next week then. Saturday the 4th of February, the Chelmsford Warriors are heading north to play the Peterborough Phantoms in the NIHL 2. And Chelmsford Chieftains are away at the High Road against Streatham Redhawks on Sunday the 5th of February. There is a coach running, so please email hello@chelmsfordchieftains.com to book your place on that return trip. If you are not travelling with the Chieftains, however, there is some free ice hockey available on Sunday evening as our ladies' sides, the Chelmsford Pythons and the Chelmsford Cobras, have back-to-back home games from 4:55pm on Sunday versus Oxford Midnight Stars and the MK Falcons, respectively. And joining me now is the head coach of the ladies' sides, Shane Mead. So, Shane Mead, head coach of the Cobras and the Pythons. Thanks for joining me this evening, fella.
Evening, Ben.
So you've had a busy evening already. Been on BBC Essex talking
BBC Essex promoted. We've got the double header on Friday. Pythons 4:50 face-off, then straight on to Cobras face-off 6:30, I believe, off the top of my head.
And I take it you mean Sunday, not Friday.
Yeah, Sunday. Sorry about ice hockey all the time, you know, it becomes your life, you lose your marbles a little bit, don't you?
It truly is a 7 day a week sport, isn't it, in that fight for ice time?
Yeah,
it is. How are the girls? Are all the girls quite excited about it?
Yeah, they're buzzing, do you know what I mean? They're training's always good, everybody just wants to be involved, get to the game, smash the game, so, they're all in a good place. Like, this is my first season jumping on board with women's hockey. I wouldn't say it's been a roller coaster, but it's been up and down, with ways of trying new things, trying to build new relationships with players. Obviously, having a man coach and women, you expect there is a little bit of a difference. Well, I think, but I work well with the team players. They're very, the thing I like about the girls is they say what they mean. Do you know what I mean? It's like if
Yeah.
there's an issue, we get on top of it. And over the last 6 months, I think I've been with them now. They've all worked hard. Every game's I look forward to because I see their development. I've seen them playing as a team, and it just all comes together. And yeah, especially this weekend, I think it's going to be really good for us.
So, moving into coaching the women then, were you coaching men and boys before?
Yeah, I was doing juniors for a bit, and then I moved into a bit of men's hockey. Did a bit of learn to play stuff for senior members of the public to get into ice hockey. Some of them gone on to play rec at a very decent level. A couple I know have actually gone into the league. And I just, I like to broaden my horizons. I haven't really, until now, should I say, found my, what's the word to describe it? But this is
Like your
what
calling.
my calling sort of thing. I've tried various routes, looked at routes, other ways to go, but I wanted to get involved with this because it was something different. It's not something I've never had a slight involvement in, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And now I'm there, I'm like, I like this. I get a lot more passion from the women. Do you know what I mean? It's
Well, that's what I was
some
going to
of
ask. Is there, as a coach, I mean, I've had Vicky on before, Vicky Friedler, who's your
yeah,
team before.
manager, yeah.
And I sort of said to the difference between coaching women and men in sport is so drastic. I was previously involved in boxing and really enjoyed coaching women because, as you said there, if there's a problem, they get it out there, but they really take it in, they really listen. Have you found that yourself?
Like I said, I've done juniors, I've done men's. There's the take away the junior side of it, but the men have always got, without sounding rude towards males, but I've been on YouTube, we've seen this. It's more of they try to. I was involved in boxing myself, but never with the women's side of it. I don't, so I can't really take that into consideration as a show against. But I found that anything involving the men's side of it is they kind of already know what they're doing before they've done it, if you know. So
Yeah, I mean,
you're
I don't
being
think that any male players will mind us saying that it's ego.
Oh, 100%. The ego at O levels in males hockey is definitely out there.
I would probably say, obviously, it's the same sport, but there is slight differences in the rules with regards to the physicality. Over here.
I
It's
think.
something the men have to have, isn't it? They have to have that little bit of ego.
It's the tough guy ice hockey image, isn't it? It's like,
Yeah.
oh, what do you do as a sport? Play ice hockey? Oh, gee, get involved. I think, especially like I've got a 13-year-old son that plays, and all he does is sit upstairs watching biggest hits and glove drops and stuff. Do you know what I mean? He's got one of his favourite fighters. I think you've got on this podcast this time. You don't. Sean McGarrow, haven't you?
Sean McMorrow, yes, the chef is
That's
on.
it. I can never say his surname. I apologise to him before I see him. But that's my boy loves that, and it unfortunately does show in his game as well. But yeah, the male side of it is about the macho side of it. It's where the women I find more about playing the game.
Yeah.
You do see some of the tough and rumble involved in the women's side of the sport, but it's definitely more, I find, skill related in the
Yeah.
ways of just playing the game and getting on with it. You're not sending players out there to slow down a game, shut down other players with a physical side. We're shutting down plays and other teams with our plays and our ability to play the game, if you understand what I'm trying
So
to
is
say.
that a comparison then, where for like a men's side, if you weren't having such a great game and the crowd was a little bit down, you would send out the big lad to ruffle feathers and maybe, start a tilt? Is that the comparison with women? You'd say, right, we're going to do this with that, keep the crowd defensive.
I just, obviously with men's hockey and women's hockey, it's not full checking. It's contact. All ice hockey is contact throughout every age group. Then obviously you get to, with the juniors, I think, once you hit under 14s, it's full contact. You've got checking involved as well. Then that goes up through the senior stages. With women's, there's no checking throughout all age ranges. Up until the elite level, it's non-checking, which I personally think takes a slight aspect of the game out of it. But that's my own personal opinion. I see there's obviously reasons and whys why it isn't there. But yeah, you know, in men's hockey, the checking thing is, and then going on to the fighting side of it, in my personal opinion, is always going to be part of the game. You know, you can slow down, you can make a game from having a fight. It's not, you know, we don't go around promoting that sort of play, but it's part of the game. It always has been since the day, and it still is. There's talk, so I've heard amongst the upper levels in the IHA that they're looking at the aspects of fighting and how it is amongst the game, and I hope to God, and it doesn't stop. It is. It's always been part of the game. You can change your game with that, you know.
Yeah, it is something I do discuss with Sean McMorrow actually slightly a little bit later on.
Yeah,
obviously it's one of his best aspects of his game.
Yeah.
And last week I spoke to Cham Jackson, a GB female player who's currently out of the Ontario Hockey Academy. But she said out there it's brutal.
Yeah,
the women's hockey. Yeah. It's like, is this no checking rule? Is it a worldwide thing, or is it just the
EA? I can't honestly tell you. I haven't actually looked at any leagues in any other countries. I've just concentrate on what I'm doing at the moment. I haven't tried to broaden my horizons in that respect. I looked at how it's run. Like I know some coaches look at stuff that's going on in other countries on way of coaching and even that side of it and how they can bring that to their game over here. I'm just, like I said, I'm still fresh to the women's side of the sport. So I'm just concentrating to get my team together before I try to change the way we're playing, if you see what I'm saying.
Yeah, of course, yeah. So obviously the Cobras have been going for quite some time and this
yeah. I think, to be fair, I think they've been going since I was born. The early 80s.
Oh, geez, isn't it?
Yeah, we've got, this is going to sound rude towards maybe some of the older ladies, but we've got a couple of original players still involved in the team. My undercoach, who's in charge of the Pythons, Jo Abbs, she's one of the original players. She was also my coach when I was playing juniors. So, yeah, there's still a few players. We've got, I think, I'm not going to say her name in case I get her age wrong, but one of our senior players in the she's playing for the Pythons, she's 53 years old. And to be fair, she's probably one of the toughest playing game players in the team. She can show some younger girls how to play properly. But yeah, it's, you know, we've got a vast age range. We've got some training up that are 13 years old at the moment that are going to be valuable members of the team next season. We've got a lot of youth players that play at other clubs that are playing as a second team at our club. We've got such a vast range from, like I said, 14 up to like 53-year-old playing in the Pythons. And then the Cobras, again, we've got some slightly older ladies and some younger players. It's, you know, we just try to develop the younger players, keep hold of the decent older players. You know, having the older players there is, it's a good foundation for the girls to build up to, you know, someone to look up to. In a way
that experience level is just quite invaluable, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm just
it's not like some sort of, you get to an age and then they kick you to the curb sort of thing. This is, if you still got it, you look at one of my favourite hockey player when I was a kid was Yama Yaga.
Oh right, yeah.
He's still playing league at is it Hungary he's from? I can never remember his original country. He's still one of the best players in the league, do you know what I mean?
They keep on going, don't they?
Yeah.
I'm gonna turn a plug socket on, mate. I'm still with you.
No worries.
Yeah, for those watching on YouTube, it's gone a little bit dark at my end, so I'm just just turning the plug socket on. But no, that's the level as well, especially with the Cobras, some of the other teams in that league, the skill level is just immense. I mean, I think I saw the result and I was sent the scorers from a game up in Nottingham. I think you won 9-8.
I'll tell you what, my entire career of playing, like when I was in the juniors, we won one season, we won the league and we won the playoffs, we won everything. And I still say that game at Nottingham, I was so ecstatic, hyped up. It was probably the best game of hockey I've watched. Been involved with it was just amazing. The girls done amazing. But they had quite a few GB players on the other team. One of the main head coaches that runs, I can't remember if it's GB or England that I'm involved in the women's side of it, he is the coach of the other team. And it was the first time I coached against him and we beat him, and it was just end-to-end hockey. It was amazing. It's one of them games that I would say go back and watch. I think it's available on YouTube and stuff like that. But
find that, I'll share that then. Definitely.
It was a great game. But yeah, we went up to Whitley Bay the other weekend in the Cobras. Unfortunately, we didn't have a great game, but they're an elite level team. They've got GB players. They're phenomenal. We've done really well. The girls done me proud. But we unfortunately didn't come away with a win. But I look at, we're going to beat them when they come down to our barn. You know, it's
And obviously the Pythons are developing, aren't they? The Pythons are a development squad from this year.
Yeah, so we've still got a decent team amongst them, but because we're trying to make them more, again, it's the first season, we've opened it up to having two teams. It's the first. Yeah. This is the Pythons' first season. We're concentrating a lot more on development. Some of them players might look to, we move up into Cobras next season. It's just kind of, we've taken this season as, how do you say it, just to give us a baseline of what we've got amongst our, we've got 50-odd players signed to, at the moment, it's a whole team. It's just we've got two so-called teams in the league, in two different leagues. But we've got over 50-odd players signed. We're just trying to work out where we want to be. We're playing girls that have never played ice hockey before in a competitive way at all, and some of them only just started ice skating this season, and we're still giving them the available time to go out and play a game.
Yeah.
So we can look at where we can be with them in a season, two seasons time. So the Pythons is more about development, and obviously the Cobras is more about just trying to do well for the club sort of thing. So it's all in hand. It's moving forward. It's the first season of having both clubs. We've got a good management team come on board now, good committee set up, and everyone's on the same page and where we want to be. We're looking at 2-3 seasons time, Chelmsford's going to be a big name on the map. You've got like Guildford and down this way, trying to think who you've got, Slough sort of thing, all over that way, Cardiff. They're big names around women's hockey. Obviously, once you start going up north, there's a lot more big name teams. But our aim of the game for us is 2-3 seasons to have our teams unbeatable position. Do you know what I mean? I can see it happening. We've got some talent throughout both teams. We've got some players that play really well together and been playing together for quite a while now. But we're starting to set up a really good base for development of women's hockey in Chelmsford, and I think with what the EIHA is trying to do at the moment, it's a good milestone for the future, I suppose.
Yeah, well, there's quite a lot of talent in the under-16s, Rattlesnakes as well, aren't there?
We've got a few of the players that they come and play for us when they're not playing there, but obviously their head coach, Jenny Bolton, she plays for the Cobras. So we've got good contact with that bunch. She knows who's good to come through. We've got a couple of their players have played, I believe, I'm sure, just put in my head, I believe a couple of them have even played the Cobras game once for us, but don't quote me on that one.
Yeah.
I'll get in trouble back at base on Friday night. But they're doing a great job there. They're pushing players through us. We've got obviously players come over. We've got a couple of international players to play for Cobras. We've got trying to think off the top of my head. I think we've got I'm sure Jenny played GB back in the day. We've got a couple of players that are training either GB or England. We've got some elite players that have come over to us for this season as well. So hopefully we're just going to... It's just about building up over the next 2 or 3 seasons, like I've already said.
Yeah, having the games free entry is a really good opportunity to try and get people in, isn't it, as well?
Yeah, I think to be fair, the last double header we had, which was our only home game we've had so far, most of ours have been away games. We had some Chiefs fans come down. We were really impressed with the quality of hockey we had. Even to be fair, like the Division Two team, the Pythons, their games are still good, but you know, like I said, for a development team, they're doing phenomenal this season. Even though that we've lost a few games, you know what I mean? They're going out, they're playing some good hockey. But they're playing against teams that have been in that league for four, five, six, seven, eight, God knows how many seasons, some since the league started. Do you know what I mean? It's
Yeah, I would imagine that it's more focused on performances than scores, isn't it, for them, really?
yeah. I don't look at the score. I look at how the girls perform. So if I come away, I can't say disappointed because I'm never disappointed because it's 110% from all the players. But if I come away from the game and I'm not as happy as I thought I was going to be, it's more down to the performance when I know the girls haven't performed as well as they could do. That's the only thing that ever like upsets me. I've never bothered about losing a game, the results, anything like that. And it's just when you know someone can do better and you've seen them do better. And then they go out and they're not really there. It's like, oh, you know, that's how the only downsides I get. Other than that, I haven't really seen that this season. Everybody's been really smashing it this season. It's been great.
Right, so the Pythons are facing the Oxford Midnight Stars, I believe, aren't they? At 50, and the Cobras are facing the MK Falcons. How have you got on against them so far this season?
If I'm honest with you, I don't believe we've played either of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I know definitely Cobras haven't played Milton Keynes. I think they're about a mid-table team. If I'm right in saying, the only. I'm just trying to think if it's Coventry. I'm not sure we might have played them away. I'm not. I'm no good without looking on the app of what teams we've played. Yeah, because I'm there with both teams, every away game, every home game, regardless where it is, I'm there. It's just trying to remember what ones I've been to. We've had a fair few away games now.
Yeah, and the distance in your leagues are just phenomenal, aren't they? Because it's not really like a North and South league, it's all national.
Yeah, it's all national. But I'm hoping eventually once women's hockey starts to build up, there's going to be a few more teams about, and they'll hopefully split it north and south like they're doing, you know, in men's.
Yeah, just to try and cut down on all that travelling, I suppose.
Yeah. But I think we were saying earlier, I think there's a 30% increase in women's hockey since
Oh, really?
COVID. So looking at them numbers, there's in two, three, four seasons' time. There's going to be some big numbers out there, and you know, big numbers of players mean more teams available to play within the league.
Yeah, definitely. And if the, I mean, I know when the sport funding came out a couple of years ago, it wasn't particularly kind to ice hockey or winter sports in
No.
general, really.
Yeah.
Because I discussed with Vicky when she was on, it's just facilities, isn't it? If there were more facilities across the country, there would definitely be more teams because the want is there. It's how there.
Yeah, it's just yeah, like I said, the thing is, you could build another ice rink and fill it with hockey players, but there won't be enough revenue there, to cover the costs of
No,
running the
because
facility.
then it
That's the only
needs
problem.
the public skating, the figure skating, it needs everything else, isn't it? Doesn't it, to keep it
Yeah.
running? I
Yeah.
mean, even our closest neighbours up the A12 in Romford, they don't have a women's set up yet, do they? So.
No. That would be a good one. I'm not. I don't think Guildford, not Guildford.
The Cambridge, that's the next close one.
Yeah, I don't think Cambridge. They've only got a university girls team set up there. Invicta, they've got a women's rec team set up down there, so I've heard.
Oh.
But no actual Div 1, Div 2, anything like that. So again, but I think that's more the amount that they've got quite a lot of recreational teams down there, and obviously senior teams and stuff. It's again, like we said, covering ice time
Yeah.
against what they can make out of public skates. Like all the public skate sessions, we've got a chance where we could probably cover with teams or recreational teams and from hockey, but it doesn't bring in enough revenue for the company to keep the rink open, does it?
Keep the
So.
ring open, no, because I mean, we did joke about them being the only ones not bothered about turning the heating on, but it costs enough to keep it all cold in here, doesn't it? So, but
Yeah. That's fantastic, mate. So, yeah, Sunday the 5th of February, doubleheader at the Riverside. I think 4:50, yeah. You say, face off for...
get 4:45. It's free entry anyway to get in.
Yeah,
and there's refreshments available.
Refreshments available and everything there. I will be there myself. I promised Vicky I would come to a home game. This is the first one since I spoke to her. So, yes, I will be there taking it in.
I will say hello to me on the bench, though.
Absolutely, I will, yeah.
Awesome.
No, lovely. Same mate. Thank you very much for joining me, mate.
All right, mate. Take care of yourself.
See you, mate. Thank you so much to Shane Mead for joining me on the podcast. So once again, those fixtures for this weekend, February the 5th at the Riverside, Sunday evening, 4:50 face-off for the Chelmsford Pythons against the Oxford Midnight Stars, followed by a 6:30 face-off, I believe, for the Chelmsford Cobras against the MK Falcons. Free entry, free women's hockey if you're not travelling down to Streatham with the Chieftains. Do come and give them a look. Now we've got a very special guest on the podcast who I have been teasing for over a week. I think I did say sort of 3 or 4 weeks ago that he was coming. We've had our chat. It was very entertaining. I really do hope you enjoy it. Here's the Sheriff, Sean McMorrow.
It's the Sheriff, AHL Man of the Year. 500 pro fights in his career. Got the record for most ice fights in the season. You fought the Sheriff, lucky you still breathe.
Right, Sean McMorrow, the Sheriff. How are we doing this evening, fella?
I'm doing absolutely excellent, man. I'm just really happy to be on a show with you. I've been waiting for a while to connect, so I'm really happy, mate.
Yeah, I think we connected sort of November time, and I was just waiting to get the podcast forward enough to get someone like yourself on.
Yeah.
Because obviously we're just about one team, but we're starting to branch out a little bit, and to have a gentleman such as yourself on is fantastic for us.
Yeah, you know, like I always take it as a compliment when I get an invite, and when it's people that I like you guys, it's even better. So thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
So, being Canadian, was there ever any other choice in sport, or was it always going to be hockey?
Well, I think that it was pretty even for me and my brothers to decide. Like, my mom got us involved in every sport. Including hockey, like when we were at a very young age. And I think just because of our size and our athletic ability, two parents over 6 feet and athletic, the kids are usually going to take after that, right? So me and my brothers and sisters just really got attached to hockey and did well. And I think that's why we were encouraged to continue. But yeah, we had every sport to choose from. We were very lucky growing up.
Oh, really? That's fantastic. So it's, I mean, to make it as a professional as you did and have such an illustrious career as a professional, you must have had to have a sort of sense of selfishness.
Yeah, I mean, I think it helped me being the oldest boy. Like, my sister's the oldest, and then I'm the oldest of three brothers. Yeah. So I was the first to go through everything, like the AAA level, the junior level, the pro level. Like, I was the first one to do it, right? And I think I obviously had the support of all my family, including my siblings. And in a way, it probably was selfish, man, you know, because a lot of people really helped me out because I was the first one and I was the one that actually made it. So I think I selfishly got extra support from my home base.
Yeah, it's in no way a dig because it's kind of it's just how sport is. If as an individual, you are going to make it in a sport, you have to make your life about that.
Oh yes. Oh yes. And like I knew deep down that, you know, the time that I was taking for the sport, you know, all the parties I had to turn down when I was in high school. Oh, you want to go to so-and-so's party Friday night? Oh man, I got a game, man. I can't go. Like that line was said quite a bit. And like, I know that any player, any parent that's listening to this podcast, they can really like associate with that, right? Because that's probably one of the biggest things is having that confidence, living through the selfishness of aiming for something and being able to deny things that may be able to interrupt that. Because a lot of kids end up going the party way and giving in, and yeah, then they miss a practice or they miss a game. And then they kind of go a different path and they don't continue with the sport, right? So, I mean, this is a very good conversation, and I'm very glad to be a part of this one.
Well, we had last week on our podcast, we had our head coach, Mark Saunders, on, who had done sort of England junior level and been involved in that. And he's part of our sort of player strategy elite program, is bringing the guys through from young. And he quoted a really fantastic coach from Finland who says, "You never know how good a player is going to be until he meets his first girl and gets his first beer."
Yeah.
Because that can change everything.
Yeah, I mean, I could see exactly. I mean, there's different ways to take it, but the way that I see that is, you know, the player gets his first goal, and you said his first beer, right?
His first girl.
Oh, first girl. Yeah. His first girl. Okay, yes. Okay, so that's an even bigger point.
That's
so,
just a distraction.
Yes, exactly, man. And like, but it's a two-way street with that, because some players can hook up with a girl at a young age. And you'll hear about this later in their careers. Guys like Steve Ludzik, guys like, you know, they had high school sweethearts that actually stuck with them throughout their journey, right? And then those players attribute their significant others with really, like, with their parents and, like, in a small group of what really helped them make it, right? So it's very interesting to hear different people's stories, because, you know, girls could be some players' downfalls, and now that there's all the girls' hockey players, we can see it for a full circle. Guys could be girls' downfalls, and girls could be guys' downfalls, but it could also be the opposite. So if you do get that special someone, I'm talking directly to the players right now. For the guys, if you get a girl that cares about you and that's supporting your hockey, you better stick with that one, because there's not too many like those out there, right, my friend?
No, there's not. And talking with girls hockey, it's brilliant, because the episode that we've got you on is with our Chelmsford Cobras head coach, Shane Mead, as we've got two female sides that play out.
Oh, wow.
And Shane's coming on with me this week as well, because they're playing a double header at home. Their games are free entry, and we're just trying to get as many people as we can into the rink to watch the ladies play.
Yes, well, I mean, for the listeners that are listening to the show, I could tell you one thing. I'm a big fan of girls' hockey, of women's hockey, and I'll tell you a couple of reasons why. I mean, first of all, I have an older sister that I, you know, grew up, you know, idolizing and watching her play and her athletics. The women have a different kind of competition in them. Like, I find that in the middle of the games, it gets so intense, and it's a little bit different from the guys. The guys look at it over as like the more of a generalized in the game, and they have their game plans and this and that. The girls, man, when they're really pressing, like in soccer, what we learned from the World Cup, for the Canadian fans anyway, we were really, really pressing, right? We were pressing, but then they turn it up. So anyone that goes to that game, you're going to see some wild, wild action with the female, with the girls, women's hockey. And I strongly suggest you check it out and buy a ticket.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. So I've been saying there with your sister and then with all your brothers. Have you all played together, you and your brothers?
Well, I'll tell you what, that's an excellent question, because it's very rare that you do get to play organized. You know, you hear the stories of brothers playing in the NHL, this, that, playing together. Now, my experience playing with my siblings actually comes from elementary school, the school that was grade 1 through grade 8. So you're looking at from 6 years old till you're about 12, turning 13 in grade 8 in Canada. And we had a hockey team, a school hockey team. So I'm only 3 years younger than my sister. So the first year that we had it was when I was in grade 5 and she was in grade 8. She made the team, I made the team. We were both defensemen and we were defense partners, right? Okay. So that was pretty special to be able to play with my sister on an organized team, you know, like it was a school circuit. And you know, we got to play at Maple Leaf Gardens, where the Toronto Maple Leafs play, the NHL team. Like we had a school tournament there. And there you go, wearing the hat, representing my hometown. I appreciate it. And I got to do the same thing with my brother Patrick, who's 3 years younger than me. Patrick got to play with players that ended up going to the NHL, like Anthony Stewart, Chris Stewart, and you know, I was in grade 8 and he was in grade 5, and we got to be defense partners. So that's my experience playing with my siblings, and it was a great experience. It was wonderful.
That's brilliant. We did last week in the NHL. We had two brothers get penalties against each other.
Yeah.
And Pittsburgh Senators game, wasn't it?
I actually saw that video again today, and I shared it on my story. Because then they show the parents.
They send the parents in the stands.
They don't know what to do, man. They're just like, ah, are we mad? Are we happy? What do we do?
And I loved how they were each wearing the different jersey, the parents.
Oh, yeah. Like,
there's,
oh, yeah.
You know who each one's favorite is then.
Yeah, man. That's a good problem to have when you're trying to figure out who to cheer for when you got two kids playing in the top league, right?
Yeah. I mean, fortunately, I've only got the one child because she'll always be my favorite. Because she's my little girl. She's my princess. And if I had another one, she would always be that little bit special. And I always say I grew up in a family where one sibling was the favorite, and it was horrible for my brother.
Hey, I love this sibling rivalry. I absolutely love it, man. Trust me. I got two younger brothers, man. One's only an inch shorter than me, but he's got about 50 pounds on me, heavier. And then the other one is about 8.5 inches taller than me, and he's got probably about 70 or 80 pounds on me. So, Wow. So trust me, we're big athletic brothers, and I love this. I love this sibling rivalry that I could feel through you and yours.
Me and my brother, we've got a bit. We're best buddies. He's my hero, but yeah, we've definitely got some rivalry.
Of course. And it only makes us better people, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and Baz Luhrmann said, you know, be nice to your siblings. They're the best link to your past, and they're most likely to stick with you in the future. So definitely one for siblings there.
So hey, mate, just before we move on, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I have to ask, because you put out two incredible promo videos for our show.
Yes.
Is that you, or who do you credit that? Is that you that put that together, man? I felt blessed being a part of those videos.
That is all me, and I do my phone on Instagram stories, and I screen record it, and I edit it all together in iMovie. I don't know how to use a computer, I don't know how to use editing stuff, but you give me an iPhone, and I can make pretty much anything like that.
Right on. It is interesting how much we have learned. I'm talking about you and me, because I'm hearing this story about technology. Like, when you take on a project, and like with us, you know, it's the podcast, but with that podcast comes the promotions, comes the posters, comes the, you know, delivering the show out to the platforms. And we need to learn. Like, I got my brother-in-law, Danny Granger. He helps me with my show. You got to have some people that are helping you, man. Or is this just a one-man show?
It's just me. Yeah, it's just me.
Really? Wow. Yo.
Yeah,
that's cool, man. I'm not wearing one, but hats off to you.
No, well, I've got an LED light shining at me, so if I take mine off, I'm going to blind you.
That's great, man. Good for you. Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt, but the listeners need to know this, man. This is great what you're doing.
It's just me. I've really enjoyed doing it. It's I'm sure that my wife sort of says, you know, you can't do too much of it, because watching hockey every Saturday night and Sunday night, and then I'm just plugging my phone in, so it's gone a bit dark. I've just got to plug my light in somewhere else. And, so I'm watching my hockey over the weekend, and then I do this on Mondays and Tuesdays. I don't like it to go sort of past Mondays and Tuesdays, otherwise it ends up taking up too much of my time.
But right on, man. Well, I'll tell you what, man. I know the grind. I know how much time it takes. The fact that you're a one-man show, man, I got to give you that credit. We're lucky as listeners.
I'm probably underplaying slightly, because I do have – it's me and my daughter that go to the games. We're season ticket holders for Chelmsford Chieftains, and she writes everything down in the program. So, yeah, when there's a penalty or there's a goal or anything, she writes down the player, penalty, the time, and everything. So when I do my match reports, I've got all them details.
Right on. And what's her first name?
It's Jocelyn. She's 12, nearly 13.
Oh, wow. Hey, shout out to Jocelyn. Jocelyn, you said?
Yeah, Jocelyn, yeah.
Yes, shout out to Jocelyn. Great job, girl.
Yeah, she's...
I'm enjoying the work you're helping with your dad. I'm enjoying this a lot.
I've got a question from her later on, actually. So that's...
Yes,
that. But there's something I did want to ask you, because I don't think it's really been brought up. I know you had Luke Sellers on your podcast a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
You know, with the Danbury Trashers, the time scale fits, your style of play fits. Did AJ Galante ever get in touch with you? Was you going to Danbury ever an option?
Well, I was lucky enough to meet AJ after that Netflix documentary came out, because I had just started my show. And lucky enough for me, man, I just hit him up at the right time. And he agreed to do my show, and it was before he agreed to do any of those big shows like Spit and Chicklets and all that. So I was actually the first one to get AJ Galante on a podcast after the Canadian release of Netflix. So, you know, I want to be official because I don't want to upset anybody. But yeah, so I met him being a guest, got to know him a little bit. But then, of course, May 21st, I was lucky enough to be the host of Ice Wars, which is a production that AJ also put together. So then I got to actually meet him in person. We spent about 4 days together in Edmonton. And then, of course, there was an Ice Wars 2 where I got to see him again. So to answer your question, though, I talked to AJ about that. I'm like, hey, because I was under contract with the Buffalo Sabres playing for the Rochester Americans those 2 seasons that he was the GM of Danbury. Yeah. So he told me that I was on his list, but he knew that I was under – he was like the secret to AJ is he would go after players that were either – that their contracts just finished, and then they were kind of wondering if maybe they wanted to go to Europe, maybe they wanted to take another shot at the AHL or the East Coast. But then AJ and Jimmy would just come in with these big offers and just offer them the world pretty much, right? Like you should have heard the stories about – because I've had a couple players on my show that have played for the Danbury Trashers in that era. And it's not just about the money per week. It's about the way they were treated. They were treated like gods. Yeah. They lived in incredible places, incredible condominiums, townhouses with backyards and, you know, like – like it was like playing in the NHL pretty much, right? And there's an old saying in hockey, which you're going to know as soon as I'm halfway through, look good, feel good, and play good.
Yeah.
And if all those things are in line and you have enough support, sometimes that's the difference between winning and losing. Yeah. And those 2 seasons, I believe Danbury made it to the finals both years. And I know one of them, it was like a heartbreaking loss. I think it might have been a Game 6 or a Game 7. So, you know, look good, feel good, play good was proven in those 2 years with the Danbury Trashers.
Yeah, and if anyone watching or listening hasn't seen it, I think it's Untold Crime and Punishment, I believe it's called, on Netflix, and it's just
incredible
documentary.
It's probably one of the best hockey documentaries that I've ever seen. Hmm. I can give it that for sure.
It's really a fantastic watch. So it's obviously you enjoy the confrontational side of the game. And the physical side of the game. Is there something special you had to train for that? Did you do any combat training, martial arts, or boxing?
Well, I mean, it's funny because, you know, I'm talking to the whole hockey community right now. Like, the difference between 20 years ago and now is that now we're so much more aware of how to be better prepared, how to feel better, how to be more healthy, all these things, right? So now you got people going to the gym all the time.
Yeah.
20 years ago, people didn't go to the gym the way they do now. To be a hockey player, to have a private coach and do private lessons, that happened 20 years ago, but it was very rare. It was just like kind of like the richest kids on the team may have done it. But now, like, everybody does the hockey schools. Everybody does the extra ice. Everybody does the summer programs. So now I know because of guys like Curtis Gabriel, guys like Luke Gazdick that I've had on my show that just finished their careers recently, they took some martial arts stuff because they played in the last, like, 5 years. And you know what I mean? But, like, I'm telling you, back in the day, like, when guys were playing, like, you know, like I was under contract with Buffalo. I got drafted in 2000. Was under contract from 02 to 06, right? So we're talking 15, 20 years ago. And it was the willingness to do what your teammates weren't willing to do. Obviously, it was usually the biggest guy on the team. Now, we all know that sometimes when those teams just chose the biggest guy on the team, sometimes that would be an embarrassment because that guy was just a gentle giant and ended up just being a punching bag, right? But most of the time, the heavyweights were about 6'4", 220, which is about my size. The guys that were willing to do it, the guys that may not have had the same skill level, but because they were willing to do this role, they were able to play at the highest levels. And that was a situation like myself, my friend. Like, I came into Major Junior as a stay-at-home defenseman.
Yeah.
And came out of Major Junior as a fourth-line winger because that's the position that I just had to conform to give myself the best chances to make it to the next level.
Like into the next level. Yeah, so there's, I mean, as you were saying there, it's something we're seeing less and less of in the NHL is the fighting. And there's certain players that kind of don't seem to want to get involved. I mean, you've got your Crosby, Matthews, McDavid. Do you think the league are trying to discourage their stars from getting involved in that side?
I mean, I think that the NHL is going through like kind of a roller coaster type of era when it comes to the physicality, because what we're seeing is we're still like people would have thought that the fighting would have been totally pushed out by now, but it's not. It's been grandfathered, right? But it's not gone. So now why isn't it gone? When you have all these things that are trying to get it out, the instigator rule, the mandatory visors, the, you know, if you fight, there's this new one where like if you get an instigator in the last 10 minutes, it's like a game suspension. So it takes away all the payback stuff that happens in the game within the game. And you know what I mean? Like slowly they've really given a lot of reasons for guys just not to play that way anymore, but it's still there.
Yeah.
So now you've got to look at that and you have to be like, well, if it's still there and they're trying to push it out so much, maybe they shouldn't be trying to push it out completely. Maybe they just need to try to make it safer, right? Yeah. And now, and sorry, go ahead, my friend.
Well, I just think it's such a vital part of the game, and that's why it's still there, because it's in the game's fabric. It's in its history. It's in its core. So, they, as you say, they can try and push it out, force it out. They're never going to. I mean, we see it now in our leagues over here in the UK. You don't see it as much in the down, but it's definitely there, and it's used as a tactical resource. You know, if the game's a bit hard and the crowd is down, send your big guy on, ruffle some feathers, the crowd gets up, the team gets up, and then everything's going.
Absolutely. And you know what? That is probably what the UK has that other parts of the world don't have, is what you just said right there, because the fans are different in the UK. There's a little bit of tailgating that goes on. There's bands that play in the arena. That stuff doesn't happen in North America, right? So the fans get, I believe the fans, because of football, because of soccer, like traditional mentality, the fans get into the games a little bit more. The crowds in North America could be really boring, my friend. You could go to a Leaf game in Toronto, and like, although the game is great, you know, all these corporate guys in suits, and you know, they're all sitting there and afraid they're gonna spill their cappuccinos, and it's like, get out of here, man! Let's get the real fans in here, like in the UK, where they're, you know, make big high fives and hugging each other, and you know what I mean? Like, oh, we don't want to wrinkle our suits in Toronto, but you know, over where you are, it's, I believe when I played over in that, across the pond where you are, it was a little bit more exciting. And then when a fight would break out, are you kidding me, man? If you can get fired, this is what I say to my UK brothers. If you can get fired up for a football game, right? Yeah. Can you imagine how fired up people can get for a game where there's bare knuckle fighting on ice? I mean, come on. It's pretty easy to get fired up, right? So now, and then you see it happen, man, it could turn the games around upside down in the UK, a lot more effective than it does in North America because of the fan participation.
Yeah.
Right? That's what I believe.
Entirely agree. Well, I mean, currently in Canada, in hockey, boy, you've got something special in Connor Bedard.
Wow. Okay, so I've heard about this kid for a couple of years now, right? Because he was one of those exceptional players. And when I say exceptional, that's actually the term that they use. If you're noted as an exceptional player, you're allowed to go into a major junior league in Canada 1 year earlier than everybody else. Jason Spezza, I believe John Tavares, just certain players have been able to do this. Connor Bedard is the newest one. So he's been in the league, in the Western Hockey League, you know, in the CHL for a couple of years now.
Yeah.
He's been leading his team. He had like twice the amount of points as the second place participant. Like crazy numbers like that. Like how McDavid is, right? But now he's doing it at the world junior level.
Yeah.
On the world stage. I mean, if you I don't have it in front of me. If you look up the points for Team Canada, the man has like double the amount of the second place guy.
Yeah, I think he got over 50% of your points in that tournament. It was all him.
Right? So you got to think, man, like if his numbers are that much better, he broke all these records. He broke Eric Lindros's overall point record for the tournament. He broke Mario Lemieux's record for goals or whatever it was. Like if he's beating all these guys, he's going to probably do that in the NHL too. So like that's how exciting this is. So now here's the question. I mean, if this is that generational, if he's the best player since McDavid, since Crosby, before McDavid, and Ovechkin, then who's going to tank to get this guy?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel bad saying the words, but everybody knows like that that's a part of it. Now, the draft lottery is usually the solution to, like, you know, teams doing that, right? But I mean, I don't know, man. I don't know if that's real or if it's just to please the general public that it's not all fixed. But
no.
I mean, I heard that the Arizona Coyotes, okay, the old Phoenix Coyotes, Arizona, I heard that they're going to get the first overall pick. And now the reasons why is they've never gotten one since they've been in the league. Gary Bettman absolutely loves the Southern United States, wanting to grow the NHL.
Yeah.
He's a big fan of the American teams. You know, Quebec City got denied. But I believe that now, you can quote me, Paul Bissonnette already said this, Biz Nasty from Spit and Chicklets, but I agree with him. I believe that the Phoenix Coyotes will be selecting first overall after this lottery. And I believe that they're going to obviously select Connor Bedard. And that Connor Bedard is going to be responsible for bringing the desert to become the hockey area. You know what I mean? And try to grow the game that way. Other people think that Vancouver Canucks might get him because he's like, I guess his hometown is pretty close to Vancouver. And then maybe that could, you know, spring up the whole West Coast and stuff. Yeah. But it'll be interesting, my friend.
You could say 15 years down the line, it could end up in Vancouver. I mean, we're talking now, they're talking about Matthews might go back to Arizona in a couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, man, the Leafs better lock them up because it would only make sense, right?
Well, they better start getting through the first round of the Stanley Cup first.
This year, hey, brother, this year is going to be a really, like, I know they say that every year, but I was surprised that they didn't clean house from last year. They gave it one more shot with this core. Mm. The coach, like Keith, and the core of players, they have to win this year.
So yeah, the Leafs have just got to get through the first round with this core, and then they might look to rebuild.
Yeah, I mean, I believe that they can, but they have to. They have to, because if they don't, then it's just kind of like, I mean, they were supposed to do it for the past like 3-4 years now, right? So they have to do it, or I mean, at least Keith's going to get fired, and they'll probably mix up. They got those four big guns on the Leafs, right? So they'll probably trade one or two of them, probably, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So hopefully they can do it. They got a lot of people hoping that they can.
Yeah, they didn't even really get an advantage last year, finishing top of the conference. They ended up playing Tampa.
I know, but like, I mean, like you would have thought that they would have really learned their lesson from that series. I mean, they really got out-muscled. I mean, obviously they got out-goaltendered too, but they really got out-muscled. And like, you know, you really would have thought that Toronto would have added some like muscle that could at least play a regular shift, but they didn't. You know, they're not really letting Wayne Simmonds play that much. And, you know, whenever he gets in there, he seems to be going center ice and throwing them down. So,
yeah. I stayed up and watched the Bruins game a couple of weeks ago. Him and Felino after 20 seconds.
Yeah, how awesome was that, though?
Yeah.
His first fight of the year. Like, Like, he looked like he was leading the league, leading the NHL in fights. Like, the way that he was switching, there was a time that Foligno was coming back and looked like maybe Foligno was going to start taking the advantage, and then Wayne just gave a hellmaker left, and just like I was so impressed with Wayne Simmons in that night. Like, he looked like he had been in the lineup every night the whole season. So to the players know what I'm saying that are hearing this, to be able to step in and to put on a show like that is incredible execution by Wayne Simmons.
Yeah,
incredible.
Yeah, especially to have something like that in an original six game as well is just brilliant.
Oh man. Yeah, no, Boston against Toronto, original six. Yeah, you can't get any better than that. Old school hockey, you know, the big bad Bruins.
And that's why man. You won't force it out of the game, because the original six will not let it go.
There you go, man. And hey, now that we're talking about Boston, what a season for the Boston Bruins.
Unbelievable season, yeah.
I just saw an article saying that, you know, their goaltender is the fastest goalie to 25 wins at this point of the season. Like, they're doing really, really well. They're breaking records right now. I think they only have six losses on the season.
Yeah, it's quite a strange season, actually. In all the conferences, it's quite a strange one. There's teams that no one thought would do particularly well that are doing really well, and vice versa.
Yeah, Seattle is another team that's doing exceptionally well this year, and that's a big surprise. And then on the other side of things, Columbus, the team that Johnny Hockey went to, that disappointed all those Calgary Flame fans by choosing to go to Columbus because Columbus was supposed to be the spot, they're not even doing that well. So it's very interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah. So I've seen you've done a little bit with the Hockey Hall of Fame representing Seaside Hockey Club.
Yes. So I was absolutely blessed to have the opportunity to attend the Carnegie Initiative Summit. Now, this is a summit that was very well put together. It was not only a reopening of the Herb Carnegie Arena in Toronto, which I had an opportunity to go on the ice, be part of the group that was the first group to be on that ice. Herb Carnegie has a grandson named Rain Carnegie that actually played with my brother Patrick, the one that's only the inch shorter but the 50 pounds heavier. Him and Patty grew up playing together, and so our families are well connected and pretty close. And you know, this grandfather of Rain, he was supposed to be the player that broke the color barrier in the National Hockey League, but the NHL wasn't ready for it at the time, and then Willie O'Ree ended up being that player. But Herb Carnegie was the best player at the pretty much what is now the AHL. He played for the Quebec Aces, was the leading scorer, and was ahead over the rest of the players. There's a lot of ex-Montreal Canadiens that say that he's the best player they've ever played with, because it was like the farm team for the Montreal Canadiens that he was playing. And yeah, so Herb Carnegie is known as the best player to never play in the NHL, but because of his work after he retired in the community, creating hockey schools, creating scholarship funds for players so they would have a pathway to do something with the sport, he was inducted as a builder. And it was a long time coming. His family had been pushing for it for a while. And he was finally recognized for all the great work that he's done. And at the same time, the last couple of years, this Carnegie Initiative Summit was being formed. So it was a 3-day event of the grand opening of the arena. There was some Lifetime Achievement Awards, some Trailblazer Awards. My good friend Kirk Brooks, who's actually the founder of Seaside Hockey, he won a Trailblazer Award, and that took place at the Hockey Hall of Fame, those pictures that I've posted lately. So not only did I get a chance to, you know, be side by side with, you know, guys like Brian Burke that came out to support. You know, me and my mom got to hang out with the guy for a long time. Brian and my mom around the same age, so they were like, you know, two peas in a pod. And you know, it was incredible. Ted Nolan was a speaker. All day Saturday there was panels of speakers of like-minded people trying to create ideas to make this game a better game for everybody. Yeah. So the whole MO of the Carnegie Initiative is for inclusion and acceptance in hockey. And it's not just about race, but it's about women being accepted in hockey. It's about immigrants being able to play hockey in the countries that they go to. It's very deep, and there's lots of levels to it. And to see all these smart, incredible, creative people speaking on a panel of how they're going to make things better, I just felt so blessed to be there, being able to walk around the Hockey Hall of Fame as a VIP because of my connection with the Carnegies. My mom was with me. My girlfriend was with me. We all had a great time, and it was such an honor to be a part of that initiative.
Yeah, and fabulous timing. Us talking about it, as the Elite League has just had, I think the National League here as well, they've just had their Pride weekend.
Yeah.
A lot of the guys wearing Pride jerseys to say that, you know, hockey is for everyone. Hockey is inclusive. Everybody is welcome.
Yes. There was a lot of Pride representative at the initiative. Brock McGillis, who was the first professional hockey player to come out, he was actually a speaker on one of the panels.
Brilliant.
Pride Tape was represented there, but I don't think that they were actually there in person. And yeah, there was inclusion includes every demographic. It's not just about race, although man, it was so great what they were doing when it came to the race relations with inclusion as well. The whole weekend was just fantastic, man.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely fantastic. Really good stuff. So you've obviously come over here towards, you know, the end of your playing career. You played at the Belfast Giants. You played at the Dundee Flyers. Did you have a preference between Northern Ireland and Scotland? Because I know you are Northern Irish by heritage.
Yes, I. We cut out a little bit there, brother. But I get the gist of what you're saying. Yeah, no, my experience coming over to your side of the pond. It actually was initiated by my general manager for the Rockford IceHogs. My last year in North America, I was playing in the AHL for the Chicago Blackhawks farm team. Yeah. And, you know, I was 28 years old. And, like, that's usually a time in, like, for all the players that are listening, they'll agree, when you're in your late 20s, that's usually a time when you're in North America that, you know, you have to decide, am I content with where I'm at, or am I ready to see something different? Right. And, you know, that was my sixth year in the AHL. My type of role was on the downfall, and I had just won my third AHL Man of the Year award. And then here are the Belfast Giants, who are the huge, huge community team in that country, bringing the communities together. And they were looking for a guy that they wanted as their hard man, but also a guy that would be kind of the face of the team off the ice, that would do all the public appearances, and that would really embrace the mission of the Belfast Giants, which I mean, I love talking about it. When I was there, and I know it's still the same way, the British government takes advantage of this team in a great way, uses the team, you know, to bring the communities together. The team on purpose is based on neutral colors. The blue, the green, it's all neutral. The Belfast Giant, Finn McCool, is a novelty of the story of the Giants that would step on the big rocks in Port Rush, which is the northern tip of Northern Ireland. Yeah. And they would battle the Scottish Giants and protect the land. And it has nothing to do with religion. It has nothing to do with football/soccer teams or different sides that could cause fights. Exactly. When you come to the Odyssey Arena, you can only wear a Belfast Giants jersey or civilian clothes. You can't wear a football/soccer jersey, or you can't wear any colors that might give the intention that you're part of a certain group. So what the idea is that two people from opposite sides of the town that maybe historically have been taught not to like each other can sit side by side in an ice hockey arena and celebrate the same team. And, oh, well, what does that do? that opens the possibility that we might be able to get along and celebrate life together and stop the troubles. And that's what it's really all about. And I was all about that, man. I am still, but I was all about it. I wanted to do every appearance. I wanted to do it all. And so we just had two sides that really wanted each other, and we made it happen. And that's when the whole sheriff thing blew up in a good way. You know, I had the t-shirts, we had the little badges. I brought one out here for the show. This sheriff badge right here, we sold the Belfast Giants just for £3. So even if I wasn't your favorite player and you had a different jersey, you could put my badge on that other player's jersey and support both of us, right?
Yeah.
So it was great. It was great marketing. It gave me great confidence. I really embraced the whole, you know, off-ice adventures. And I'm telling you right now, brother, I know this is a very long answer, but that really sparked up me having the media career, because I understood that I really liked being in front of the camera. I liked speaking in front of big groups, and I really liked to be the medium.
Yeah. Now, you can tell, it's almost like you, I was listening to one of the other podcasts about when you nearly went on to Sportsnet and you were going to be a sort of an anchor and a pundit on there, and it kind of all went away. It seems such a shame. That's why I really enjoy that you do the Sheriff podcast, because otherwise they're not utilizing your experience and your media knowledge.
Yes. So, yeah, and you know what? I'm really glad that you brought that up. So now we're in 2023 now. It's amazing how time has flown. The question is I always ask myself, you know, with COVID and whatnot. So COVID pretty much for everybody, kind of the whole, like, our lives changing from it was kind of around March 2020, right? 2019, it was easing into it. March 2020 is when really they started doing lockdowns and restrictions. I know they did it in the UK. They did it here in Canada. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, that pretty much lasted until like last year. People kind of say it was about a 2-year period. So now the question is, were those 2 years, now I'm asking you, my friend, were those 2 years the longest or the shortest 2 years of your life? Or do you even know?
My life didn't change at all. I carried on working and...
Yeah. But I mean, as far as like I just, it just feels like those 2 years, like, yes, a lot of us were able to carry on and do our normal stuff, but everything was different in a way. The people that we had to deal with were different because so many people were so affected, or they were for one side or for another side to the extreme, and they're acting weird in certain ways. I don't know about you, man, but there was a time where I could drive through downtown Toronto and it was like a ghost town. No one was there. Where it's usually
I was working in central London and I was on my own.
Right? So, but that did something to people. That affected people. Right? It's not just about these vaccines and about the restrictions. It's just about our way of life change. It did affect people, and we have to deal with all these people. So in reality, we've all been affected. Now, for me, it was kind of like the shortest 2 years, because it was like a blur. It was like, you know, like I was blessed enough to have a full-time job at a Home Hardware in downtown Toronto, which is like a Home Hardware is like kind of like a Canadian Tire. Like, it's like a really Canadian company, and it's like, even though it's just like a regular retail store, like, people respect it. And, yeah, you know, my brother-in-law was the manager, and I was able to get a job when like no one was working, and I felt blessed. I actually also started my podcast during the same time period. And I don't know, man, like, I think that we've really learned about ourselves a lot the last couple of years. Those of us like yourself that were able to kind of, you know, do these types of shows, like, this has been life-saving to some people listening to these podcasts, because there's been record numbers of depression, of suicides, of domestic, you know, episodes in a bad way. And, you know, people have now, like I've learned this through studies, people are now listening to podcasts more than any other time in life, and they're really being saved by it because they can relate to what we're saying, and it really cures them. It's their therapy, brother. So you got to keep going, because you're our therapy,
man. Yeah, so are you. So are you.
It's earlier
in, it was late 2022, it was actually your old team, the Belfast Giants, started the initiative, It's Not Weak to Speak,
to try and get men to talk about their mental health. And it's something a lot of the other podcasts pushed as well. I chatted to our players about it, particularly obviously coming from a group sport, a team sport. When you're in a group of men, it's something that probably didn't happen in your day. It certainly didn't in mine when I was playing competitive sport, that you don't talk to each other about that sort of stuff.
Yeah, but I mean,
I think it's changing now.
It is changing, and I really like the way that it's going. I mean, before it was just, we just didn't know. I mean, some of us did, but the general public, we just didn't know about all these things, right? Like you can talk about concussions, you can talk about like a lot of different things to do with our brain. We weren't getting into it because we didn't have enough information. And now that we do, I'm happy with the steps that our game has taken. A lot of people like yourself have stepped up, and awareness leads to action. So you need guys like yourself that are making people aware of all this stuff, and then that leads into action, right? So it's very important. I try to do the same, and we just have to keep going, brother. We got to keep pushing these envelopes, make the world a better place. Anything for the better good, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. I've got a couple of questions now that come from our listeners, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
One from another Ben, not me, but another Ben, has asked, where did the nickname The Sheriff come from?
So, yes. Yeah, great question. So the first time that I heard the nickname The Sheriff was, it was after a game in that notorious league, the LNAH, and I was at one of my owner's bars, our main local hangout after the game. And my owner was very happy with me. I think I had a really good fight. I think I might have even scored a goal. And he came up to me, and in a big, thick French accent, he said, "From now on, we call you Le Sheriff." So that's the sheriff in French. And from that point, it stuck. But like I said, when I came to the Belfast Giants, that's when it really came to light. That's when I really started getting merchandise and badges. And then having it like as a part of my social media name, stuff like that. But this is back in, yeah. So back in 07, the first time I went to the Quebec League, Fred Tremblay is his name. He was the one that started it, so he gets the credit.
Brilliant, brilliant. The question from my daughter Jocelyn is, "What's the best fight you've ever had?"
Oh wow! Well, I'll tell you one thing. The best fight I ever had, I mean, I would have to go through some video and rank them, but I'll tell you, the most influential fight that I've ever had was with the Belfast Giants, and it was my first game against the big, bad Brad Voth,
right? Okay,
of the Cardiff Devils.
You went at it in the media, didn't you, before that?
Well, I mean, it was, yeah, there was, because what I was told when I got there was that Brad Voth, like, pretty much owned the league the year before. Like, no one was tough enough to really beat him. And because he was such a good player, getting first, second line ice, you know, he was dominant. He was scoring goals, getting points, and beating everybody up. And he really had a great time against the Belfast Giants, because I guess he just had really strong games against Belfast, and he just felt really good and was able to just run everyone and just throw everyone against the boards and beat up whoever challenged him. So the fans told me, you know, the number one guy that you got to get is Mr. Brad Voth, Mr. Brad Voth. I kept hearing Brad Voth, Brad Voth. So it's our first game against the Cardiff Devils, and we're at home. And trust me, I had no idea how big of a deal this was going to be, because I guess another part of this story is that the man had never been knocked down.
Oh, wow.
No one had ever put big bad Brad Voth down before, right? So I didn't know that. I knew that he terrorized the Giants the previous season, but I didn't know all these little things. So, of course, they start me in the game. Like, I was in the starting lineup. So was Brad. And I just wanted to get it over with, because I just wanted to please my fans, because it was still the beginning of the season, and I had to kind of earn their respect. So I'm like, yeah, you know what? I keep hearing this name. I want a shot at this guy. I want to beat him. And I want to please these fans that I need to be part of my movement this year, right? So that's where my head was at. So thank God he obliged, because he kind of ignored me the first part of the shift. And then finally I gave him a little tap, And he's like, all right, this guy is probably not going to give it up. Like, leave, he won't leave me alone, so I'm going to do it. So we were able to square off and everything in the Odyssey Arena, center ice. Perfect scenario for me, right, as a new player to the Giants. And to be honest, I did my regular square off. I faked that I was going to go right. I started left. One, two, the second one put him down.
Wow.
And that was it. I never got hit. I only had to throw two punches. The second one put him down, and the crowd went wild. I did my thumbs up, and that was really kind of like how I was able to get the fans on my side that season in Belfast. Yeah. And I was so proud, man. I was so proud seeing how pumped up these fans were for that. And I really realized, man, this is a lot bigger of a deal. This is a lot more of a deal than I thought it was.
Yeah.
That's what I realized. Imagine if
the sheriff was born that night.
Yeah.
What I'd like to do with you now, man, if that's okay, is what we do at the end of these video interviews with the Chieftains players is we do a little thing called Chiefs Briefs. And I'm going to just fire some either or questions at you. So it will just be two answers and just give the first answer that comes to your mind.
All right.
So, Batman or Superman?
Batman.
Tea or coffee?
Coffee.
Netflix or Prime?
Netflix.
Ovechkin or McDavid?
Ovechkin right now.
Bauer or CCM?
CCM.
Plane or train?
Plane.
Hot or cold?
Hot.
Beach holiday or city break?
City break.
Toronto or Belfast?
I go with Belfast.
Yeah, that's the man. I said, it doesn't actually get that warm in Belfast, but it gets a little warmer than Toronto.
Yeah, that's right.
Are you having it cold over there at the moment?
Well, man, like here, man, because we're doing our phones today, let's give the viewers something here. So there was a big snowstorm in Toronto last night.
Wow.
And this is what it looks like in Canada right now. I don't know if it's upside down or can you see it normally?
Yeah, it's on the side, but you can see. Yeah,
you can see it better now?
Now it's upside down.
Okay, so this way.
There we go.
Yeah, man. So this is just, you know, whenever I did my Zoom shows, I do it from my mother's house in Toronto. So that's where I am right now. And yeah, that's the vision of the neighborhood with the snow. It's probably about 2 inches.
Yeah, it's a little icy here, but it's pitch black. So it's 9:15 at night here. So it's pitch black.
Oh, yeah. So what time is it right now where you are now?
It's 9:15.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's dark and it's cold. So anyway, Sean McMorrow, the sheriff, I'm so pleased that you joined us on Zero Pucks Given. I've really enjoyed chatting to you. And all the best for your podcast. I mean, feel free, give it a plug, man. The Sheriff Podcast, give it a plug.
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, like, I just want to say how great of a time I had, man. You make the guests feel incredibly comfortable. It's very entertaining. This is a very good way that you do your show because everybody's got to feel the same way that I feel, which is very welcomed and very honored to be on your show. So I want to point that out first and foremost. I try to do the same thing that you do, man. I'm trying to be like you with the Sheriff Podcast. You know, I got about 160 episodes now, but doing it about for a year and a half. I've graduated to live shows at a studio in Toronto, which is at Bottom Line. I'm really going to be taking a huge run at the sports networks though, to be Mr. Sports Center soon. So I'm really trying to amp up and get on the best shows as possible, like Zero Pucks. And yeah, man, I'm hoping for the best. I've been grinding it out for a while, so I'm hoping that pays off. And, you know, kill them with kindness. That's the best way to do it.
Absolutely, yeah. And so we hooked up because you tagged me in a picture on Instagram because the Sheriff Podcast made it to number 3 in the UK podcast charts. At the time, we were sitting at number 1, which I was just massively shocked about.
And yeah, I'm trying to be like you, man. In the
picture. So I was like, yeah, and that's when Danny messaged me and said, you know, Sean would like to come on. And I was like, yeah, give me a couple of months to get bigger and then we'll get it sorted.
Yeah. Well, I'm so happy that today was the day, man. And if you're ever in a jam, if you ever need it, I would love to come back.
Absolutely. Thank you, man. I really appreciate that. If I ever get back to Toronto, I'm going to hit you up as well.
Oh, dude, I can't wait. Hey, if you come to Toronto, you better call me.
I went in 2002. I was 17. I fell in love with the place. That's where I fell in love with hockey. I went and saw the Maple Leafs there. And
yeah,
it feels like a sort of like it's in my heart. It's a spiritual home for me.
Yeah, so, man. Well, Danny lives right downtown, about a 5-minute walk from the Scotiabank Arena and the CN Tower and all that. I'm in the East End, so you'll be able to see it all, man, if you come.
Yeah, no, I keep saying to my wife that we've got to do Canada one day. We've got to go back to Canada.
Yeah, buddy. Well, say hello to your wife, brother. And again, thanks for having me on, buddy. I really, really appreciate it.
Nice one, man. Anytime. Real pleasure. Sean the Sheriff McMorrow. Good night, sir.
All right, buddy. Take it easy, man.
Cheers, buddy.
Thank you so much to Sean the Sheriff McMorrow for joining me on Zero Pucks Given. I'm sure that will not be the last time. There's much, much stuff that we didn't even touch on that I'm sure we'll get to at some point. So if you do like your NHL and your American hockey and stuff like that, do check out the Sheriff podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, because it is a really good listen. And as I'm sure you're aware now, Sean McMorrow is one lovely man. So yeah, thank you for him to coming on, and do go and check out his podcast. So now, returning from Lake Placid in New York after the FISU games for GB students teams, here's our number 81, George Gell.
Number 81.
George Gell, how are we doing, fella?
I'm lovely, thank you. How are you?
Oh, I'm very well, mate. Welcome back to the UK. You've been out Lake Placid, New York.
Absolutely, yeah, I have. Just got back on Wednesday morning, I think it was.
Yeah. Any big crocodiles?
Didn't see any myself, no. I didn't see anything. Thought I might see, like, some moose or something, but nah, nothing.
No. Was it sort of upstate New York?
Yeah, it was pretty close to the border. It was about 45 minutes from the border. It was good. It was a good. So we flew into JFK in New York City, and then it was about, must have been 7-8 hours on the bus from there. So it's quite a way. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've spoke to a couple of people over the last week who were in sort of Ontario and Toronto, and the snow's been pretty severe up there. Did you see some of that?
Yeah. Well, there was a massive storm, I think, like a week or 2 weeks just before we flew. I think it was more in Buffalo where there was like 15 feet of snow in places or something like that. So I was a bit worried before we flew, but it was all right. There was a couple feet of snow everywhere, but they got the snow plows out, so it's about.
Yeah, they know how to deal with it over there, don't they?
Yeah, a lot better than here, yeah. All the roads were clear, all the paths were clear. No bus.
Cool, no problems at all. So how was the tournament then? Did you get much ice time?
Yeah, I did. I was on... Yeah, I was quite high up the lineup and got good ice. You know, you've probably seen the scores, so it didn't go perfectly on the score line, but I was pretty happy with how I played for most of it, especially the last two games. It was Hungary and Korea. Did all right. I think I got a few assists in them, so I was happy, but unfortunately we didn't win any games.
No, but you were playing such high calibre of opposition that it's a learning curve, I suppose.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like, even there was a few guys that had done, like, GB juniors, but, like, that's tiers within the divisions and stuff, whereas this was just sort of anyone who wants to, here you go. So with our first game against the US, it was a bit of a shock to the system, I guess.
Yeah.
Haven't lost that much.
Is it the first time GB have had a student set up?
No, so I think there was a little break over COVID. I think the last time they went was 2019. And then I think the games are every 2 years. So the next one is end of 24, start of 25. But they have to, like, bid to get in. And there's, like, you know, so there was a few years where they missed it, I think, before 2019 because they didn't win the bid or whatever it takes.
Yeah, and I noticed you missed the game with an upper body injury.
Yeah, it was nothing serious. I just sort of tweaked my neck a bit as I got hit in the game against Slovakia, and I had a bit of a stiff neck, so I thought I would sit that one out.
You didn't do that playing mattress dominoes with the rest of your teammates down the hotel corridor.
I actually missed that. that was the only time that I wasn't there. That was right after our last game, and yeah, I got permission to go because my parents came over, and yeah. So for that, while everyone was doing that, I was in Montreal watching the Canadiens versus Panthers, while they were trying to hurt each other with mattresses or whatever they were doing.
It was quite an entertaining video, actually. If you've not seen it, you can head on to the GB women's team. Yeah, they shared it as well.
There was a lot of stuff like that, but hopefully most of it wasn't on video. Otherwise, we'd be in trouble.
Yeah, I can imagine there's all sorts of stuff going on. I think some of the GB, I think it might have been under 18 lads that went out into Europe earlier this year, and one lad was sent home after a day. And there was multiple rumours flying around as to what had happened, but I don't think anyone heard the full story.
No, I did hear some of the gossip, and we had a little conversation where they were like, just don't be like that. Don't end up on Twitter or anything.
Kind of went quite viral, actually, on Twitter, especially sort of like ice hockey Twitter as a little world of its own. It was big news.
Yeah, well, there's nothing from us yet, so should be all in the clear.
So how did you start playing, mate? How old were you? Because are you Nottingham born and bred?
No, I'm from Kent.
Right.
So my parents live about 10 minutes from the Invicta Rink. So I started playing, I was about 7 or 8, I think, because my older sister worked at the rink and just fell into it, I guess. And one of my older brothers started playing a little bit before me. So it was about 7 or 8. So I played at Invicta until I was like 12, 13. So a few years there. Then I actually came to Chelmsford as a junior, I think between, 13 to, I think I was 17 or 16 when I left. Then just bounced around Guildford, Romford before I went up to uni in Nottingham.
No, so it was just university in Nottingham that got you up there?
Yeah, nothing else. I came up in the middle of COVID, so it was 2020 that I first moved up here, which is where I have a couple of years of not officially playing hockey on Elite Prospects or the websites or whatever. So there's a little gap, but I was just in uni, skating with the uni team.
Yeah, so obviously in Nottingham, we've got the facility there that you can have a uni team, which must be brilliant.
Yeah, it's good. We actually have a really good setup for the uni team. There's, I think there's, we've got 5 teams this year, and there's like 150 people from the uni that play. Like it's tiered, and then we're all in a different bucks, like university sport tier. Yeah, it's quite enjoyable.
And is that in the Nottingham Arena?
We occasionally play in the arena. Most of them are in the small rink next door, in the same building, in the small one. But sometimes we play in the arena, and we do for varsity, which I have coming up in a week, I think it is, Monday.
Oh, excellent, excellent. So being an ex-Invicta player, are you going to be with the Chieftains for the Britain Cup final weekend against Invicta?
I will be, yeah, I think so. I should be, yeah. Unfortunately, I can't, haven't been down as much as I would like to. I think I've played like 7 or 8 games, I think, so far. But with being away, and there was a couple of weekends that I missed because I had some uni stuff to submit. I haven't been down, but I'll definitely be down for the Cup final. Big weekend.
It is indeed. Big weekend, yeah. It's, hopefully, actually, the roster looks like it's getting thicker again, and like a lot of people are coming back from injury, and as you say, sort of, general personal unavailability.
Yeah, should have everyone back by then.
Yeah, so everyone should start getting back there. So, is there any other sports you do at any level?
Not anymore. When I was at school, I played field hockey. I was quite good at field hockey, but it wasn't for me. And just school rugby, school cricket a little bit as well. But just hockey these days.
On contact, isn't it? So.
Yeah, that's more my game. I can have my head down and no one hits me.
Yeah. That's brilliant. So you said when you was out in Canada, you caught the Canadians against the Panthers. Do you follow an NHL team?
Yeah, I follow the Tampa Bay Lightning, but I only really follow them because the last time I went to the US a few years ago, that was the team I got closest to seeing. So it's not really a great reason to support them, but I do, and they won a couple of times in the last few years, so I'll take it.
Yeah. It's certainly on the list. There seems to be like a list of criteria of what it takes to support an NHL team. And sort of going on holiday within like 2 hours of one is definitely on that list.
Yeah, I mean, I should probably support the Canadians now, but they're pretty awful, so steer clear from that for a while.
Yeah, unfortunately, if you get stuck, I mean, I started with the Maple Leafs in 2002, and I'm stuck with it. So.
Yeah.
But no, I've got a couple of questions that have come in from the some of the listeners and some fans and some of your ones from your players, teammates, which are... I'm not entirely sure how I'm going to word them to keep them clean, but Mr. Grizzles, which I believe is Bear, has just asked, burger or pizza?
I'll say pizza because my part-time job in Nottingham is delivering pizza, so I'll stay loyal to Papa John and say pizza.
Yeah, getting all them that fat and carbohydrates in while you're studying. Yeah. There's a question from Lucy Fay. I'm going to word it exactly as she's put it because I had to actually ask her what it meant. Was smash or pass Luca Tessardi?
It's going to have to be a pass, I'm afraid. I have to check his date of birth on that one as well.
Yeah. I had to ask what it meant. I'm too old. I can't. young person vernacular. And Sophia the Sign Girl has asked, have you ever been snorkeling or scuba diving? And if so, where's your favourite spot?
I've not been snorkeling or scuba diving, but that sounds like something fun to do. I've got more warm holidays.
Do you tend to find yourself in cold places then for a holiday?
Yeah, well, I didn't go away for 3 years while COVID, COVID. But I definitely need to get on some hot holidays. Catch a tan. I'm a bit pale. I need to catch some colour.
Oh, well, Dan Hitchens is trying to muddy the waters.
Mm-hmm.
And he's asked, if you can tell us, of course, because in the spirit of keeping this clean-ish, mm-hmm. what happened on the bus back from Cardiff?
It's not that much of an interesting story, but I don't know why he fixates on it a lot. He's asked me to tell this story about four times since I've been in Chelmsford, but... So it was a few years ago in my first year in Romford Seniors, and we got our bus to Cardiff, and we lost the game, actually. I think we were leading like 6-1, and we ended up losing 7-6 or something, so that's nothing to brag about that. But then on the way back, we inevitably had some beers, and basically by the end of the journey, I was a little bit, covered in a little bit of vomit of my own. Most people had moved away from me on the bus. I think I was a bit smelly. And I ended up getting carried off the bus. It must have been 4 a.m., 3 a.m. whenever the bus got back by... my dad had my ankles. And I think Ben Pitchley, the coach in Romford at the time, had me by the shoulders, just carrying me like I was on a...
An 18:30.
Yeah, to the car for the journey home. Nothing crazy. Just a few too many drinks.
Yeah, I can imagine that's quite standard actually on away days on a bus and the beers are flowing. It's probably quite a standard thing,
especially to Cardiff. It's a 5-hour journey. It's a long half the time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They're. Do they have a second? Yeah, the second team are in the NIHL too. So the Warriors, I think, have done that trip already. He's also asked, do you like whipped cream?
I do like whipped cream. Yeah, thanks, Dan. I won't elaborate on that one, but yeah.
Oh, in the spirit of keeping it clean, we can't elaborate on that, though.
No, I shouldn't.
But no, I need to catch up with Dan, actually, because there's something that was on his interview that he couldn't reveal to me to keep it clean. We've not caught up for him to actually tell me the story yet.
Well, I wish I was in the questions, putting him under the bus a little bit there. he's so keen to get me in trouble, I might do the same to him.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant. Now, we've obviously, since you've been with the Chelmsford Chieftains, you started off obviously wearing the spare jersey 20, but I believe your number is 81. Is there a reason behind that?
Not particularly, no. I had 81 when I was a junior at Chelmsford. And since then, I sort of switch between 81 and 19. There's not really a reason, to be honest. I like to say it's because 81 and 19 add up to 100.
I've got some Chiefs briefs to do with you, mate, if that's all right. Just a few little random either-or questions just to answer as quick as you can. I've done some new ones, and I've cut it down to keep it a little bit shorter as well. So, are you ready to go with them? We'll crack on?
Yeah.
Righty-ho then. Snow or sand?
Snow.
Wonder Woman or Black Widow?
Wonder Woman.
Film or series?
Film.
America or Canada?
Canada.
Cam or Grant?
Grant.
Ice cream or custard?
Ice cream.
NFL or NBA?
NFL.
Boxing or MMA?
MMA.
Well, fantastic. You got through that one. You didn't stumble too much on the Cam and Grant one, which people don't normally like.
No, I might get a slash around the ankles next time I'm at training.
Possibly will, yeah. And I reckon the ice cream or custard was actually just whipped cream, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah. Well, George, thank you so much for joining me this evening.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, it was a pleasure to talk to you. Congratulations on your representing Great Britain's student team out in New York. And all the best for the rest of the season. Hope you get plenty of ice time with the Chiefs. And we'll see you for the final weekend against Invicta.
Yeah, I'll be back soon. See you there. Thank you very much.
Cheers, George. Thank you to George Gell for joining me there. Obviously, fresh back from New York from playing for the GB student side. So congratulations to him on that selection and to his play out there. You can see George's interview, Sean's interview and Shane's interview all on the YouTube channel. They're all available now. So if you just search at Zero Pucks Given on YouTube, you will find them. And you will see that George perhaps needs to get some better Wi-Fi in his student accommodation. Sound quality was great. The picture quality on our young Johnny Depp lookalike, not so good. The interview with Sean McMorrow is actually a two-parter on YouTube, completely on purpose. It's not like my phone died halfway through it or anything, just a good two-parter. So the fixtures again then for this coming weekend. The Chelmsford Chieftains are heading down to the Streatham High Road on Sunday the 5th. You can get on the coach to go down there. That's hello@chelmsfordchieftains.com to book yourself on that coach. A little nod there to also check out the chelmsfordchieftains.com website, because there is loads of new stuff on there, match reports, percentages and stats and whatnot. And it's a really, really good read and a good look. Another good read, of course, is our free programmes that we get our home games. And Zero Pucks Given's got its own little slot in there now on the reviews on the match report page. So, yeah, that's really fantastic to see. And hopefully it will spread the word a little bit more so that everyone that comes to see the Chieftains can have a listen to the podcast and feel a little bit more involved with the club. And the fixtures obviously come in this Sunday for the female sides that we'll be discussing with Shane Mead. The Pythons will be facing Oxford Midnight Stars at 4:55, and the Cobras will be facing the MK Falcons at 6:30, both on Sunday at the Riverside. Free entries to come down and see the women's side if you're not travelling with the Chieftains. So episode 16 is in the bank. Thank you once again to all of my guests that have joined. To obviously Shane Mead, the coach of the Cobras and the Pythons, who's joined me. Sean, the Sheriff McMorrow. I really do hope that won't be the last time he comes on, because that was a fantastic chat. Really enjoyed that. And George Gell, our number 81, now back from New York. Hopefully we'll see him playing for the Chieftains again very, very soon. Next week's episode then will be out on Wednesday. We'll, of course, have a report of the Streatham away game. There'll also be a bit of a report about the female games as well that are taking place on Sunday. And I will be joined by the Mayor, number 28, Danny Wright, will be joining me to discuss his extensive Chelmsford Chieftains hockey career. And I will also be joined by Nick Hyde, no relation. He's part of Live Financial, who are one of the Chieftains' main sponsors. So we're going to get his point of view on why that his company got involved with the Chelmsford Chieftains and just how much they love the ice hockey, because I see him sharing the pictures and he's at the games quite regularly. So I think they really do. Thank you once again for everyone for listening. Make sure that you're liking, you're sharing, you're following and doing everything that you can do. The listening figures, I say, are just brilliant. We've been joined by listeners from the Czech Republic and from Italy and Hong Kong, just all over the world. Just really, really phenomenal stuff. And still charting quite high in them UK podcast charts. You know, there's only really us and 4,000 and Counting and British Ice Hockey and 3-on-3 podcasts, the British ones, that are getting up there with all the ones that are about the NHL. So it really is just fantastic from all of you. Speaking of those other podcasts, actually, Nikki Watt from 4,000 and Counting will be joining me in February. I believe it will be episode 20. So we'll be discussing Nikki's hockey career which of course was quite notorious for certain elements of the game that Nicky enjoyed. And there will be coming up soon. It's going to be like a dual broadcast podcast. I will be joining the three guys that do the 3-on-3 podcast that talk about the Elite League. And they'll be asking me a little bit about the players in the National One and the National that could possibly make that step up. And I'll be talking with them about the Elite League as well. So my chat with them, I will probably share on Zero Pucks. And you can then go and hear the whole thing listening to 3-on-3. So thanks very much for your time. And we'll see you guys next week. This podcast is hosted by Anchor on Spotify. It is available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and other podcast outlets. Subscribe on Spotify and Apple Podcasts to get notifications about new episodes. Follow us on social media, Instagram at Zero Pucks Given Podcast, Twitter at Zero Pucks Pod, YouTube at Zero Pucks Given, email zeropucksgivenpodcast@gmail.com. The music in this podcast is taken from Spotify and I do not own the tracks. Thanks for listening and we'll see you next time.
Podcast Network.